On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, the New York Mets have lost 12 in a row. The Philadelphia Phillies have lost 7 in a row. And we have lost none in a row because this podcast stays winning. We'll have Matt Gelb of The Athletic on to talk about those scuffling Philadelphia Phillies. I was in New York to watch the Mets lose. And then for the first time this season, we will break out. Why haven't you homered yet? Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that thinks maybe the Mets and Phillies should try unplugging it and then plugging it back in. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And that strategy usually works for me.
I'm looking at the schedule and I am seeing that these two teams do not play each other until the middle of June. Do you think they will arrive at that series on a combined L-75 or whatever? Or maybe it would be even higher than that at that point. Someone would have to win at that point. But for now, they are going to have to find their way against other opponents. On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we are going to continue to focus on the Phillies and Mets woes. But we are going to focus first on the Phillies woes. And we welcome in a very special guest. It is Matt Gelb of The Athletic, one of the best beats in the business, and he is going to join us in our conversation about those Phillies who lost again. That is our opener. How excited are we to welcome in a good friend of the show, making his Barbacast debut, I believe it is Matt Gelb of The Athletic, Phillies beat writer. Is that true? Am I mistakenly remembering? Have you been on the show before?
I feel like I have, but maybe not. It's just maybe because I just have many conversations with you guys, and maybe I've actually never been on the show. Jake, have I been on the show?
I think that's possible, Matt. I've asked you to be on the show a couple times, but as someone with children, you are busy often. And so here we are. I wish we were speaking maybe under better circumstances.
Yeah.
The Philadelphia Phillies, the team which you cover and spend time around, are an abysmal 8-15 at time of recording. They have lost 7 games in a row. They are being protected by the even more embarrassing New York Mets in the discourse of the internet. And so we felt it necessary to shine a light on the woe that has been the 2026 Phillies. So my first question to you is, how about that?
I mean, it's hard to argue, and it's funny because at first there was a lot of anger, I think, here in the city about the start to the season, and now it's even more dangerous, right? Because it's apathy, right? Because also right now you've got the Flyers, up 2-0 in the Penguins. You've got the Sixers actually won a game in Boston. So like people are distracted, I think, right now from how the Phillies are playing, which maybe is not a bad thing. You know, maybe everyone's just like, we'll look away while this car crash is happening and they're going to figure it out, maybe. But, you know, I'll come back to them once they figure it out. Are they going to figure it out? I don't know. It's hard to be as bad as they've been. It really is. Because if you look at every facet of this team right now, there's very few things you can pick out and be like, that's going right. That's going well. This is something that they do well.
That was kind of what was going to be one of my first questions, which is what is this team leaning on as you look forward and you say, this is why this is going to get better, understanding that it's a long season and they do still have a lot of talented baseball players. And you can't even look on the starting pitching side, even with the bloated ERA, and be like, well, you know, look at the peripherals for this guy and this guy, and maybe it's going to get better. But when you do try and spin it more positively, or when they try and spin it more positively and say it's early, what are the things that you could look at and be like, well, that's probably going to turn around for the better? And then I do think we should get back to the stuff that is like, oh, this is a problem. I don't know how this is going to get better. But let's start with the things where it's like, well, maybe this should be better than it has been.
Well, I mean, I think at the pitching side, like, what are they going to lean on? I mean, like, they need their rotation to be good. This is a team that's built on the rotation. It's a $100 million rotation. They're getting Zach Wheeler back this weekend in Atlanta. He's pitching Saturday. You know, we don't know what kind of Zach Wheeler he's going to be, but I can tell you this, he will be an upgrade from Taijuan Walker. who is pitching Wednesday night, not as a starter, but as a bulk guy. The pitching, like, there's some interesting things going on here. And I think Phillies fans are tired of hearing about, well, they've been unlucky. They've kind of been unlucky. Like, they are allowing, on average, the softest contact in baseball right now. And I think they still are on pace to have a record, the highest BABIP allowed in Major League Baseball history. I'm going to guess that those things even out at some point. That said, like, you watch the starters right now, and it doesn't look like it should look. And I'm even Christopher Sanchez, who's put up some real big numbers here early on. He's gotten results. His outings have not been, he has not had his best stuff. And maybe that's a separate thing. Like, you know, Sanchez is really, I think, ascended to acid because he has succeeded without his best stuff, which to me is like the last barrier to acedom. And so
acedom.
But you look at some of these outings and it's just, it's they're tedious. They're slogs. Like, they have not had a lot of quick innings, and no doubt the offense has been a bigger problem. The fielding has been a bigger problem, but the rotation is what this team was built on. And they have not done as expected so far. They need these guys to just have more efficient innings, because right now the bullpen has been just absolutely crushed. That is just adding on to this. They've had some injuries in the bullpen. They need their starting pitching to be better, because that is what this thing is built on.
Yeah, and I think that when you look at the Phillies from afar and you see all these famous, rich players on the offensive side, you would assume that that is what this operation has relied on over the last half decade, where in reality it is and has always been the pitching, right?
Yeah. And then, like, you can point to each guy and be like, he's been fine, right? Jesus Luzardo, like, you know, the ERA looks awful, but like, he's striking out a lot of guys and not walking as many, except for his outing against the Cubs. You know, that is a good recipe for success generally. Same thing with Christopher Sanchez. Same thing with Andrew Painter, who, quite honestly, I know he hasn't pitched deep into games, but he's, you know, for a rookie, his first four outings has been really good, like what you would expect. Aaron Nola has been good, not great. He's been hit around every now and then. They are 19th in the majors in innings pitched per start right now. That is a glaring number to me. That is a huge red flag, because this is a team that, their formula has been innings from your starters. Even if they're not always great innings, they're innings, and they are just lessening the load on the bullpen. And I think it's starting to trickle down.
Yeah. You look at, I mean, that stat you just gave, like, Seattle and Philly have been so far ahead of everybody else, essentially, in that category for the last few seasons. So to be even in the middle of the pack, let alone below average, is pretty stunning.
And Seattle is still number one. Yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly. Seattle's still doing their thing. I want to move to the offense, and I think this is the appropriate way to set up this part of the conversation.
Jordan, both you and opposing pitchers would love to move to the Phillies offense.
last night in Chicago, Felix Reyes batted cleanup, okay? Now, you can say, all right, well, this guy came up, he homered in his first at bat, he's facing a lefty. Okay, that's fine. The Phillies have zero hitters on their injured list, if I'm not mistaken, right? I know Johan Rojas is suspended,
but I believe
they have zero hitters. And I'm thinking about this, I just spent a couple days with the Astros. They have everybody on their injured list, and so they're calling guys up from AAA because they literally need to field a roster, right? They don't have a choice. They just activated Daniel Johnson, who they signed 2 days ago, right? This is not the Philly situation. This decision to now ride with Felix Reyes in the middle of the lineup, which is a great story in some respects, but also, like, there is no way that this was plan A even 4 weeks ago. So how did we get to this point where this, I mean, prospect, kind of, he really came out of nowhere. You could talk about him. You could talk about why he's there, is batting fourth at this point in the season already. Because that is a place to start with why everything else besides Harper and Schwarber is going wrong.
I mean, it wasn't plan D 2 days ago. So, I mean, how did we get here? Like, okay, I'll give you a few things. I mean, right now, their right-handed hitters collectively have a 570 OPS. That is last in the majors. Oh, I mean, no. that is insane. I'm going to give you something else. Like, this is just even crazier to me. Okay. This is inexplicable. I don't even know how it's possible. Okay. The Phillies right-handed hitters against lefty pitchers, right on left, the whole season, everybody, they have a 475 OPS. That is also 30th by about 75 points. They're 60 points lower OPS wise, right on left, than the next closest team.
So Felix Reyes just got here. So who are we talking? Let's just remind folks who we're talking about here. Who are these who are these right-handed hitters that are not hitting?
Say their names.
But this is Jordan. I mean, this is the contention that a lot of people have an issue with, is that this has been an issue for a while and it hasn't gotten better. And so we're talking about Trey Turner, Alec Bohm, Adolis Garcia, JT Realmuto. You know, those are your primary right-handed bats in this lineup. And last year, Nick Castellanos was part of that group. He is no longer part of that group.
I saw that he's not there anymore.
They, of course, made an attempt very, very famously, publicly, to try to get Bo Bichette to sign with them to be their middle of the order right-handed bat in the offseason. And that did not work.
That wouldn't really have helped much at this point in the season, but I mean, worth the data point.
It's hard to say. Well, he's been better than Alec Bohm.
It's funny because that's all the right-handed bat, like Harrison Bader and Nick Castellanos, two guys who were right-handed bats on this team last year, two of the worst right-handed bats in baseball this season. Bo Bichette, a guy they were trying to acquire, hasn't gotten off to a good start this season. So I think going into the season, we were all like, okay, where is the right-handed production going to come from? Who's going to hit in the middle of this lineup? Who's going to hit behind Bryce Harper? Bryce Harper himself is like, we were wondering who's going to hit by me, who's going to be my protector. Like, what are we going to do here? And, you know, it started out the season with Alec Bohm in the cleanup spot, and Alec Bohm has arguably become unplayable. And I'm not trying to pile on it. And I think very publicly, like, he's had some issues off the field. He is currently suing his parents in Philadelphia court. I don't know how much longer, and it's not fair to pin all this on Alec Bohm because it's not all on him. But I don't know how much longer they can do this. I mean, he's a 384 OPS right now. And they've moved him down the lineup. They've done all this stuff. Felix Reyes, like you mentioned, Jordan, not really a prospect. Not really, you know, he's interesting. Like, if he gets a fastball in the zone, he's going to hit it hard, probably. He hits the ball hard. That's where they're at. I mean, that's the situation right now, is they're looking at a guy like Felix Reyes.
It feels like they need to send Bohm on the Phantom IL to a beach in Cancun just to, like, refresh the brain and have him deal with all this off-the-field stuff. Because if there's one thing we've seen with Alec Bohm is that things can spiral on him. That's happened multiple times during his tenure in Philadelphia. And I'm hopeful that he gets it sorted out because I like Alec. But, like, it feels to me as if the Phillies need to be a little bit more proactive in making sure he has the system, the support system that he needs to just get back to what he can be, which is an above average hitter in the league.
Yeah. And I think that's the question, Jake, is like, how proactive are they going to be in changing things up here? Because in the past they've preached patience, and this is a team that has had a lot of success, and you're going to lean on that track record in a lot of ways here. You don't want to overreact, but you also don't want to underreact. And I think we're getting closer and closer to the point where they need some sort of action period. This would be a lot easier if Aiden Miller, their best hitting prospect, had played a game of baseball in the last 2 months. He has a nebulous back injury. I've talked to people in the organization and outside the organization. There's been sort of this shrouded recovery process, but I think everything is going well. It's just taking a long time. I mean, he is lightly doing baseball activities now. It's going to be a while until he's even an option. And even when he comes back, you know, he's not a guy that this is going to come right to the major leagues. He needs some minor league seasoning. But, you know, Edmundo Sosa is there on the bench. Like, is he an everyday guy in the majors, like on a championship team? Probably not. Like, he's in a good role as the 10th guy. Should he get more time at third base? Maybe, I guess. Like, it's, I don't know. Like, it's hard to be worse than Bohm right now.
So you mentioned Aiden Miller, and I think Joe, you're left-handed. We need right-handed bats.
Oh yeah, I do swing a lefty. Yeah,
so it's true. You're also
they don't
bad
need
at hitting,
me, but they don't need me.
More importantly, you're left-handed. I'm also looking, and you wonder, okay, well, is there anyone, any other Felix Reyeses floating around in AAA? And I'm looking, I mean, Carter Kieboom and Christian Cairo, Leover Peguero, like there ain't much there, and that's why you are thinking about a top prospect like Miller, who, as you mentioned, hasn't even played yet, but you're thinking about the upside and the trajectory that he seemed to be on by the end of last season, and I do think it was reasonable to consider him potentially an option this season. Maybe that happens, maybe it doesn't. But I also do want to use that as an opportunity to focus on the two kids that are on the team, because their results, and I'm talking about Justin Crawford and Andrew Painter, were something that coming into the season was a big thing. It was like the Phillies finally are mixing it up. They're finally letting a few kids play. Not all of them, but some of the kids play.
Well, they're worried about a lot of other kids that were worth playing.
Totally.
I get
totally.
Your point.
But it was still a refreshing compared to recent seasons. So tell us about how they've looked so far, because I would say Crawford has slightly exceeded my expectations. Painter's about where maybe I was at. They're kind of doing their part, and the bigger problems are the guys that have been here for much longer. But what have you seen from those guys? Because if you are a Phillies fan right now, and maybe you do think the season is doomed, these are still players that are very important to like their fandom and like their interest in the team moving forward. So what have you seen from those guys?
It's funny because the Phillies probably lead the league in kids, just not kids that are on the roster.
Kids that have been like birthed.
Yes.
Let the kids play in the tunnel while they wait for their dad to finish.
I don't know, man. Trevor Williams of the Nationals has like eight kids. He might be doing his work on his own.
Okay. Yeah, but then the rest of the Nationals are young enough to be Trevor Williams' sons, right?
That's a good point. Good point.
I'll start with Crawford. Offensively, it's as advertised. It isn't pretty always. I mean, he takes some insane swings. It does not look like many other major leaguers, but he's made it work. And that was like the MO of him in the minors. It's like they kept waiting for him to have a prolonged slump. So they're like, hey, let's make a few adjustments here and there. He never did. He really didn't. And like, I think he's been fine. Like he's held his own and he's batting ninth most nights. He is putting the ball in play. I think he's taken some, he had maybe his best game as a big leaguer Monday night at Wrigley. He took some terrific at bats, especially in the ninth inning. He drew a walk. It was in a big moment. Like he's held his own. In center field, he's been just okay. And that was also the rep of him in the minors, is that it's a work in progress. His reads aren't great. He's athletic enough to make up for some stuff. His arm is below average, and teams are definitely trying to take extra bases on him. Overall, though, like you said, Jordan has done his part. He really is, very far down their list of problems. Painter, I think he's been better than I thought he would. And I know it's a 4.42 ERA, and you're like, well, that's not very good. But, I mean, the underlying stuff, 20 strikeouts, 4 walks. Start there. That's great. I mean, he is mostly throwing strikes. He hasn't always been ahead of hitters, and it's gotten him in trouble, but he has mostly been throwing strikes. The fastball has played a little better. His secondary stuff is really good. I mean, really good. Like, he's throwing this. It's a split change. It has drastically improved his situation against left-handed hitters. I've liked the poise. I think he has had a great first month in the major leagues. I really do.
And he hates an 0-2 count. It was one of my takeaways of just like zooming into his starts. Like,
all their
he'll
pitchers
get up
do right
0-2.
Now.
He'll get up 0-2, and then it's just like, how can I speed run this to a full count? And I think that if, from the pitching perspective, that is where one of the differences is in terms of not working deep into games. It's like if you're blowing 3-4 extra pitches once you're up in the count, that adds up, and then you're done after 5. And yeah, I think that's what happened with Painter a couple times.
Yeah, and Luzardo and Sanchez, if we're being honest. I mean, Sanchez has had to use a lot of pitches. Even though he's gotten results, he's run a lot of deep counts. He's walked more guys than we would expect him to. Luzardo is just, his stuff is off the charts. We know it, right? He got the extension. We know he's a good pitcher. There's still just a lot of fine tuning that needs to be done. I mean, he has needed way too many pitches to get through these outings.
Kind of back to what you began with maybe the word apathy. And I think the Phillies Mets are such an interesting comparison right now, because we've talked about the Mets fans trying to figure out who is on this team. Why do I trust any of them? Who are these people? They all are playing like garbage. Whereas the Phillies, it's like, I know all of these people and I'm tired of them. And so they are almost at the point where the Mets fans were last season, right? Now there's very different contractual situations that is going to prevent maybe some more dramatic changes. But when you think about it from that perspective, and as you mentioned, you have a sense of the Phillies fan psyche to at least a degree. What is the path forward once the Sixers and Flyers get eliminated and or win the championship? Because you can just keep football leaning season on Harper and Schwarber, but with it being a long season, maybe you can, you know, so I know you're known famously for your optimism. Where could this season go in a positive sense?
I'm going to be optimistic about this. Like, here's how I feel about it. They cannot possibly be this bad for 6 months. That's how I look at it. I mean, they are playing about as badly as you can possibly play right now in every aspect of the game. And their record reflects that. I think while there are certainly some red flags here and some things to be concerned about over the longer term, no doubt, I think that they're getting it out of the way. And I don't know where it's going to lead. I don't know if it leads them to the playoffs. I don't know if it leads them to the division. Do they win 90 games? Do they win 79 games? I don't know. But I see a team like they cannot possibly be this bad. I really believe that. And I think there are correctable things. I think right now they are feeling the weight of it. And it's easy for us to sit here and say, forget about it. Go out, try to have some fun and stop looking like, with every swing and every pitch, the season is on the line. Because honestly, it looks that way at times. And that's a tough way to play baseball, especially in late April.
I'll tell you, and this is what's weird, is that the Mets didn't look that way when I was around them yesterday. I was expecting them to be this ball of stress before the game and like to be tense, and it was the opposite.
Well, unless, the Phillies have had the right ads. Like, everyone's like, it's a new day, you know, sure. Like, and some guys have had gallows humor about it, which I think is the right way to approach it in April. Like, that's a very baseball thing. I love that. It's just like when the game starts and every day you go into the game, you'd be like, yeah, this is the day it's going to turn. You know, Lizardo's on the mound or Noah's on the mound. You're like, this is the day it's going to turn. They have good matchups in the lineup. And then like an inning and a half into the game, you're like, oh, there's no way they were going to win this game.
Yeah, it is. That is how it feels when you're on one of these streaks. But I'm leaning on the starting pitching. I just think that, especially you get Wheeler back. I mean, Walker starts have been, it's like been stopping any sort of momentum because they've been losing before and
it
after.
It just sucks the life out of everything. Yeah. It really does.
And so I do think that's going to make a difference. And as for the hitters, I don't know. I think Trey Turner is going to figure it out because he basically always does, and he's still at the top of the lineup. The rest of them, I some of them might just not be very good, and I guess we'll figure that out as we go. But Matt Gelb, this was a treat. I know maybe not the most uplifting content, but I feel like I learned some stuff. Jake, any final thoughts before we say goodbye to our friend
Bryce Harper? Kind of elite right
he's
now.
He's been fine. And kind look, of elite. There's been the thing that Phillies fans have picked out is like, you know, he's had some chances with runners in scoring position, hasn't come through, and they're like, well, he's stat padding. He hit a home run, a two-run homer in the ninth inning, you know, at Wrigley Field. It's like, okay, well, you know, sure. He's taken his walks. He said his dad gets upset when he doesn't take enough pitches, and he wants to walk 140 times. I've joked that they should put a counter up somewhere in the ballpark, like every time he gets a walk, rip it down. The chase for 140.
Fans will love that.
He's been fine. His play at first base has been eh. At the plate, I think this is a good version of Bryce.
I agree. Bryce looks great when he's swinging the bat. I am mystified by already being at -6 OAA at first base in a month. That is, I'm sure there's some wonkiness with that. That is, I'm not sure I've ever seen a small sample that bad.
Hard to do.
At a position that
hard to do.
Not that it's easy, but I can't remember seeing that. So, but it's, you know what? That's not your problem, Matt Gelb. I guess it's one of your problems, but it's still pretty far down the list.
Yeah, I don't know. That ranks. There's so many other problems they have above that.
That's fine.
That's crazy. Fair enough. Even know it was minus six. I mean, that is, I don't know. Yeah, I don't look it's hard for me to look at. When do you start looking at defensive numbers? When should I start looking at defensive numbers? Right? Two months in, 3 months in?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. But if we're talking about historic paces, you mentioned the BABIP, then maybe because Bryce Harper's got negative 6 OA at first base in a month. Okay, Matt Gelb, you can read his tremendous work at The Athletic. And whether this was your debut or not, you did a great job.
Who knows?
We appreciate you making the time.
You should keep a log.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. I saw a baseball game last night, allegedly.
All right. It's time for a field report, Jake. You were there at Citi Field for the Mets' 12th loss in a row, which is more than the 7 losses in a row that the Phillies have piled up. And also, with the Kansas City Royals' victory on Tuesday night against the Baltimore Orioles, means that the Mets are in sole possession of last place with the worst record in baseball. This game began on a positive note for the first 5 innings. So why don't you tell us about how it seemed like the Mets were finally going to snap this losing streak before they did the opposite of that?
This was snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. Nolan McClain, a pitcher who I think is pretty good, if you listen to the show, was perfect through 5 innings, was throwing a perfect game. He had struck out 8 batters through 5 innings, and it felt as if Nolan McClain himself was going to end this losing streak. Francisco Lindor had a huge swing to give the Mets an early 3-0 lead on a 3-run homer. And for about 2 innings, all was right in Queens. And then all was very much not right as McClain kind of ran out of gas in the 6th inning. The third time through, Byron Buxton takes him deep, 2-run homer. Twins tie it up an inning later on Luke Kuechel's RBI single. And then Devin Williams comes in the 9th inning of a tie game and walks the first guy, walks the second guy. The Mets screw up a bunt play. Single, walks another guy. 5-3, Williams leaves, no outs. Mets can't score in the bottom. That was all she wrote. They dropped their 12th in a row. Before we pull our hair out and talk about, you know, Juan Soto coming back today and Carlos Mendoza's job security, I would like to chat about one of the funniest things I've ever seen a baseball crowd do last night. Did you see this?
I did. I did not see it in the moment. So I tuned in to this game, I guess, maybe after the first Williams walk. I had seen that the Twins had tied it. I saw it was going to extras. I was like, you know what? This sucks, but maybe if they can keep this tied, the Mets can have a riveting walk-off victory that really, you know, injects some life into this crowd and fan base. And it's like, oh, we finally got that. We know that's not what happened. So once Devin Williams exits, a pitcher by the name of Austin Warren joins the party. Austin Warren, who has kind of floated up and down between the majors and minors with a few teams over the last few years, he comes in and just strikes out Royce Lewis, Brooks Lee, and Byron Buxton on, I don't know, 10, 11, 12 pitches. He looked pretty good doing it. So he keeps it 5-3, but most importantly, he got outs. He struck out the hitters he was supposed to strike out and prevented any further damage. And how did the Citi Field crowd react to that, Jake?
MVP, MVP, MVP. And then there were chants of Austin Warren. And it was like, it was really a remarkable thing to witness. Austin Warren, who has one career save, who was making his 10th appearance ever, for 7th appearance ever for the Mets. He had thrown 10 innings as a Met, right? Relatively anonymous reliever, right? And Williams, the second he throws ball 2 to the first hitter, the writing's on the wall. It's like, this is not going back on the rails. The fan base knew it. And So they kind of, that was an ugly couple of minutes. But then Warren comes in and strikes out the side with the bases loaded and no outs. And each swing and a miss, the place goes nuts. The reported crowd was like 32K last night. That's not true. Not even close. At this point, there were maybe 10,000 people left, 12,000 people left. And every one of them was on their feet cheering for Austin Warren. Every single swing and miss, a hurrah, a wall of noise. The MVP chants were incredible. And yet the Mets could not turn that energy into anything in the bottom half, where they just went easily without a fight. It was the type of move that I think only a Mets fan base could do, the Austin Warren thing, because it was so self-aware and so fatalistic and so, like, it was just this perfect tone where it's like, yeah, we're still here. We don't know why. MVP Austin Warren.
This is where I'm glad you were there. I saw video after of Devin Williams facing the media and Lindor and Mendoza. Did Austin Warren speak after the game? Like, I know it would have been a kind of awkward. I'm not saying he should have, but I'm curious if he was approached post-game because
had won.
It's a tough, right? Austin Warren, of course. It would have been one of the best. Yeah. Now, it still would have been in the context of the Devin Williams disaster, but that is an interesting what if that I am sure Austin Warren will be asked about at some point, and he will have to give a respectful answer. It's a tough spot for him. Let's be honest, like, I'm not really sure how he's supposed to handle that considering the situation, but I totally agree with you. It is well done, Mets fans. This was terrific stuff.
But that was the only ray of sunlight in an otherwise cold, dreary evening at the yard, 12 in a row. And I took the train up yesterday in part out of morbid curiosity. You know, I wanted to rubberneck in a way. I wanted to gawk at this train wreck. It was like, oh, you have a flesh wound? Let me see how gross it is. How bad has this thing got? You know? And that's not really what I found. The Mets were fine vibes-wise at the beginning of before the game. I guess all bad teams are, in a way. Carlos Mendoza, the manager, said everything he should say. He had the right tone, the mixture between self-effacing humor and seriousness and perspective and levity and gallows humor. And then they just went out and lost the baseball game. Like, their work before the game looks good. Like, they're not screwing around. They're not trying. They just aren't winning the game. And I'm not really sure what to make of that.
Yeah, and I've sort of experienced this last season when Cleveland's year was spiraling, partially because they couldn't hit, partially because two of their pitchers were being investigated by the federal government.
Don't have that.
Baseball teams are pretty good at just like, yeah, well, whatever. We're here. We're having fun. We're doing our thing. We're going to win tonight. And then they don't. And then they get to try again the next day, which they will again on Wednesday, as kind of a fascinating challenge the next couple of days, which I'm only just now realizing. On Wednesday, and we should talk about Juan Soto here in a second. On Wednesday, they will face Connor Prelip, who is one of the best pitching prospects in the Minnesota Twins organization, a lefty making his major league debut, which you could see that as an awesome opportunity to, you know, all right, this guy's, he doesn't know what the big leagues are about. Or it's like, oh my God, we've never seen this guy before. Here comes another, you know, seven scoreless innings because, you know, this is challenging. And then Joe Ryan is throwing on Thursday. So
working off of Prelip today is going to be Kendry Rojas also making his major league debut.
So the Twins are
stacking debuts today. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I missed that. Okay. So that's fun. But I mentioned that just because the story remains. I know last night the story was Devin Williams. The story still remains the Mets offense. And here comes Juan Soto.
The Mets offense last night was bad. Like, Lindor
got
a cookie from Simeon Woods Richardson and hit it a mile, but they did not have a freaking base runner in the sixth, seventh, eighth, or ninth. Like, they did not do their job. Like, even if they end up winning that game, like, it was not a good performance yesterday.
That remains the story, which brings us to Juan Soto, who is expected to make his return. And I believe Mendoza admitted after the game where he said, like, yeah, I didn't think it was going to be this hard to score without him, but we're excited to have him back. And him and Lindor saying, you know, we can't put it all on him, but it's going to be nice to have. And it is an interesting little moment here in the Juan Soto Mets tenure. When you just reflect back, I know it hasn't been that long, and you just think about what he was last season, where early on he had that brief little blip where it was like, oh my God, he's kind of slumping. And that was true by Juan Soto standards. And then for the last 3-4 months, he's one of the best hitters in baseball, and he's an MVP finalist, and he's amazing, even as the Mets are totally collapsing. Now you have a situation where the Mets have fallen into this MLB worst record hole while he's been out. He can only do so much. I'm curious how this manifests, how he handles it, how he performs, if he starts raking and they're still losing because no one else can hit, if he does really make a difference and now everyone starts hitting. This will be, no matter how many wins they or losses they start piling up, the offense, I'm just so excited to and curious to see how it kind of manifests over the next few weeks.
One of the funniest characters in this to me is Luis Robert Jr., who was traded from the White Sox to the Mets over the winter after a career on the South Side, where he was on one of the, if not the worst team of all time. And he shows up and the Mets are this disaster, and he's probably like, yeah. Like, I would imagine that certainly helps him compartmentalize this, where he's been a good player on a bad team before, right? Where it's like, oh yeah, like I could get my work done. I know how to perform if I need to when we're not winning. So,
yeah, but it is also just horribly unfortunate because I'm sure there's also a part of him that's like, oh, I thought that was behind me. So, but he's mostly doing his part, certainly relative to the rest of the Mets offense, which now, by the way, includes Tommy Pham, which I don't think we've even mentioned since he joined the team.
I'm not sure how long it will include Tommy Pham because I heard that the Mets are probably going to call or activate an outfielder today. Named Juan Soto.
Okay. Well, that's true. Juan Soto is that guy, and presumably Polanco will be back to at some point. So fewer at bats available for Tommy Pham, but they are MJ Melendez is hitting right now. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Good to see for MJ Melendez. That maybe that one will end up working out. But altogether, they need to score more runs, and at some point, they are going to have to win a baseball game here. As we mentioned, we zoom farther out. It's just been one game into the stretch, but we looked at the schedule, and we said, okay, Twins, Rockies, Nats, Rockies, Angels. If you want to get back on track, like, this would be an opportunity. Otherwise, yeah, it's New York. It's the Mets. It's what happened last year. It's what happened this year. Mendoza's just going to be the focus, whether it's fair or not. And I think David Stern still deserves a lot of the attention too, but this is how this stuff works. The players don't get fired, and the GM usually doesn't get fired during the season. It's usually the manager. So I think that is why that will continue to be a conversation. Yep.
I think it will continue to be a conversation. And obviously, you know, I've been asked about it. It's been a topic of conversation here in New York. And I think given the circumstances, which is a catastrophic end to last season and a horrible start to this season, Mendoza's job could not be more secure given that context. Now, could he still get fired at some point if things continue this way? Yeah, absolutely. But I think internally, there's not really a conversation about it going on because, and this is just, they really like him. They think he's really good at the job. I think he's really good at the job. And the problems that have transpired are not his fault. And I think the fan base kind of gets that. And I think that the front office believes that to its core. And like, yeah, could they fire him if they lose 28 in a row? Yeah. I just think that he has more leeway and leash here than maybe you would think. He certainly is not moving and acting like a skipper on the hot seat, which I saw, you know, last year at times in Baltimore when I would go down there with Brandon Hyde. And like, I just think that Mendoza's going to be okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see. They are going to have to win at some point here. So we will see if that happens. For now, we're going to take a break. When we return, it's our first edition this season of Why Haven't You Homered Yet? And a few other topics. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbecue.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. A lot of people have homered this year, but not all of them.
Not quite. Last night on Tuesday, a lot of guys hitting their first homer of the year. Now, some of these guys have been injured, so they haven't really racked up that many plate appearances. But some of them have been playing all season and only just got their first home run, which I felt as an appropriate time to welcome back one of our favorite segments. Why haven't you homered yet? So last night, this collection of players avoided being asked this very simple question. Jacob Marcy of the Miami Marlins, who was the active leader in the most plate appearances without a home run this season. He had gone 104 plate appearances to start the year without homering. He finally homered. So did Jeff McNeil, Kobe Mayo, Cabrian Hayes. Ooh, yikes. Good to see that after his tough start to the year. Seiya Suzuki, who had been injured. Adley Rutschman getting on the board. Dane Myers. He's a candidate to be on this list for much longer than he was. But all those guys got their first home run of the season. So congrats to them. They will not be asked this simple question. However, this next group of gentlemen are not so fortunate. And as we always do here, I will ask the question to these players, why haven't they homered yet? And Jake will speak on their behalf, which is an unfair ask of Jake, who doesn't even know which players I'm about to ask him about. But he will do his best.
It's an even more unfair ask of these players to be portrayed by me. And we will begin.
Much is unfair about this. However, it's a baseball podcast. We're having a good time. We begin with a player who has come to the plate 86 times and has yet to hit the ball over the fence. He was once lauded for his prolific power. Spencer Torkelson, what are you waiting for? Why haven't you homered yet?
For me, Spencer Torkelson, it really just comes down to jealousy. The amount of money that Tarek Skubal got in ARB, I thought I deserved that. And until the Tigers pay me that, I'm holding out. And I'm holding out home runs. So don't expect a home run for me unless you wire 32 million cold ones into my bank account. This is a hostage situation. Okay. And the cold stretch will continue until I am paid.
Spencer, it's a very interesting point, considering you are also notably represented by Scott Boras. I don't know if that is something that you maybe could have hashed out with him. I thought you were going to be jealous of the 21-year-old on your team, Kevin McGonigal, who also just got paid. But I see that. I see that. You want to be paid before you render the services.
pay me up front. Yeah. You know?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'll do it. Okay. I can. I'll do it. Like, I'll hit the home runs, but.
Okay. Not yet.
Pay me now.
Got it. All right. Fair enough. We move to another first base slugger who I was a believer. I was like, this guy is one of the best young hitters, not that young, but youngish hitters in the National League. Michael Busch, what are we waiting for, man? You've come to the plate also at 93 times, and you have yet to hit a home run. The Cubs are doing just fine without your home runs, but I would like to see you kind of get involved here. What's going on, Michael?
We get one of these every year. Cold, windy. It's cold and windy in Wrigley Field.
Cold, windy. Got it.
That's famously known as the cold, comma, windy city. The windy, cold city. And even though I play half my games away from Wrigley Field, if I don't hit my first home run at Wrigley Field in front of those wonderful fans, you know, at the friendly confines, it doesn't really feel like I've got my season started. And so to get it going, I like to hit my first one at home, and it's been cold, windy.
Okay, cold, windy. Hey, simple enough. I feel that.
All right.
These we'll are not excuses. Here. Let's be clear. Not excuses. These are just reasons. There's a difference.
These are objective reasons. Let's go to a gentleman who, last time I checked, has the highest hard hit rate in all of Major League Baseball and yet has yet to hit a home run this season. One of the strangest starts to any season I can remember. Fernando Tatis Jr., you do not have a home run yet, even though you have a 67.7% hard hit rate, a terrific ex-WOBA average. All the underlying stuff is great. Your defense has been unbelievable in right field, as always. You've stolen six bases, but you haven't hit a home run, Fernando. What's going on?
So as you know, my life, my career changed when I hit the ground. When I fell off my motorcycle and messed up my wrist when it hit the ground. And even though statistically I have never really been the same in terms of production since I hit the ground and then used steroids to come back after hitting the ground, that experience changed me for the better. And I feel as if I owe it to the ground to give back to the ground, to pay homage to the ground. And so that is why I am hitting the ball so often on the ground.
That is a great take or a great reason. Thank you so much
Not
for explaining. It does does explain your 4.8% pull air percentage. Your ground ball rate is not actually that high, but you know what? We'll take it. It's okay. Thank you, Fernando. I appreciate the explanation. All right. Two more here. We are now approaching the top of the leaderboard. This gentleman was on fire. Sorry. You personally, who I'm speaking to right now,
me.
You were on fire in spring training. I thought you had figured it out and I was finally going to be like, yes, I told you all that you were going to be one of the best young infielders in the National League. But Matt McClain, you have come to the plate 103 times and not once, even in the smallest Great American Small Park in Cincinnati, you have not hit one home run. What is going on, Matt McClain?
This is very simple, and it's about you, Jordan. You are not wrong often. You are often right. You are typically right when it comes to the sport of baseball. Your analysis, your prognostication, your skills of evaluation are on point, good sir. And I got to knock you down from that perch. I got to keep you honest. Me, Matt McClain. And I remember when, you know, you used to hang around our parts when you lived in Indiana. And there's definitely a little bit of resentment that you left us in the lurch. But mostly... Good Sir Schusterman, it is about making sure that you are wrong every once in a while.
Be humble is what I'm hearing. Sit down. Yeah. Sit down, yep. Jordan. That's what Matt McClain's telling me. All
Who right, are you fair enough. To tell everyone how good I am?
That's on you. They're right. That is entirely your prerogative. Fair enough.
Famously, baseball players love telling everyone how good they are.
We will finish up with the current active leader. There are several other great names on this list. There are some where it's like, well, yeah, I know why you haven't homered yet. You're Luis Arraez. That's kind of your thing. You don't hit home runs. But we're going to go
playing, Chandler Simpson in the WBC.
Yeah. Right. Right. Exactly. So Chandler Simpson, like, I know why you haven't homered yet because you can't. It's fine. I know you did barely in spring training. Whatever. Okay. We finish up. 105 plate appearances for this gentleman. You are one of the best baseball players in the world, and you haven't hit a home run. Bobby Witt Jr., I know the Royals finally won a baseball game last night. Congrats to them. They have snapped their losing streak. I believe on Wednesday, we are going to have an announcement about the future of their ballpark, maybe moving downtown. Very exciting. Good thing that they snapped the losing streak before that. But you know what did not happen in the Royals' riveting comeback victory over the Baltimore Orioles on Tuesday night? A Bobby Witt Jr. home run, which has not occurred yet after 105 plate appearances. So, Bobby Witt Jr. here on the podcast with me. What are you waiting for, my guy? Why haven't you homered yet?
People always say, that I can do a lot of different things for a ball club. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's too much. It's too many things that I can do for a ball club.
You're just, yeah, you're stretched.
You know, I'm a little stretched, a little thin. And so I just wanted to take something off my plate, I think. And the obvious one was home runs. Was take the home runs off my plate. Just to simplify my life. And yeah, because sure, the problem with a home run is like it takes a while to run around the bases. Yep. Like I gotta go all the way so far to do that. Mm-hmm. And so I figured singles are better. Doubles even.
Yeah.
Are better.
Well, and I think that first point is particularly relevant. That also probably helps explain why you've only scored 4 times this season. Mm. It's a long way around those bases. But Bobby, thank you so much for contributing that explanation. I don't know if I would have, I maybe would have sacrificed something else there instead of home runs. But surely, okay. Bobby, with those moved in fences, will change. That will change at some point. He will squeak one. He will get a wall scraper there at some point in the near future. All right. Thank you, Jake. Really appreciate that for speaking on behalf of those homerless players. And we will do it again in a month when hopefully those players we just asked have at least one home run. Okay. A couple more quick topics before we say goodbye. Let's go around the league. I want to talk about the Houston Astros, who I just saw for a couple days here in Cleveland. They won the first game, lost the second game in messy fashion. The reality is the Astros are very injured. They are even more injured than they were when they arrived in Cleveland because Taylor Trammell, friend of the program, is the latest to join Houston's injured list after a groin strain from running the bases. The Orioles were just here, and the whole conversation around them was like, oh my God, we're so hurt. Nobody's more hurt than us. And then the Astros showed up and I was like, okay, well, they're more hurt than you guys for sure. But I do feel like this is something that a lot of teams like to almost crown themselves at different points in the season. Weaponized. Where they're like, guys, we're the most injured. And there are ways you can measure this. And the way I'm going to go about it in this here brief segment is very straightforward. But do you agree with me? This is something you hear over the course of a season where a team's just like, man, I mean, look at us. We're so banged up, man.
We're so banged up.
So.
No one's more banged up than us.
I just wanted to do some fact checking here and kind of see where these teams are at. And most interestingly, also look at the other end of the spectrum. Because you know what no one ever says during the season? Because it feels like bad luck. We're so healthy. Man, we got everyone. We got everyone available. This is great. Nobody's hurt. We're feeling good. You'll never hear that ever. But that is the case for some teams. The Houston Astros, by placing Taylor Trammell on the injured list, that was their 16th player on the injured list, 11 of which are on the 15-day or 10-day. So, you know, if you move a guy to the 60, that means he's, you know, have another spot on your 40-man roster, but they have 11 guys on what is essentially the active roster that are on the injured list. So that's 10 pitchers and 6 position players. 6 position players is more than any other team. The other teams at the top are the LA Dodgers at 13. However, that's 10 pitchers and only 3 position players. You know, Mookie's
That's just like a bunch of pitchers that I don't even know around the Dodgers that they probably signed to rehab.
Hey, Bobby Miller and Bruce Dar and Gavin Stone. Sure. Like they're very far. It's a little bit different than the Astros situation, who are like the players they were actually counting on. The Orioles are in third with 12 players on the injured list. That is even after activating Adley Rutschman, they still have a healthy number on there. A healthy number of hurt players, I should say. The D-backs, Giants, number Cubs, of
healthy players.
D-backs, Giants, Cubs, Blue Jays all have 11. So Toronto was one I was interested in because they're definitely a team you hear like, well, they're clearly the most hurt.
They're banged up. They're in the mix there.
And then let's just go to the bottom. Do you have any guesses as to the teams that are the least hurt and how many players they don't have on the injured list?
So the Phillies have a lot of hurt pitchers, but not any hurt position players. The A's, I think, have just Brent Rooker and probably a pitcher I can't think of. Cleveland has all of its guys. There's probably one or two others that I'm not thinking of, but those are the three that come to mind. Philly, Cleveland, and the A's.
You nailed it. So Philly and Minnesota and the Nationals are the three teams with zero position players on the injured list. But in terms of total players on the injured list, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, and the A's all only have two. One pitcher, one hitter. Which is, again, a huge difference from these teams at the top, let alone most of the league, which has at least, you know, eight or nine guys that are injured. And yeah, it's pretty stark. And I don't know what you make of this. I know this is just like a snapshot in time. But this is a real thing that certainly impacts certain teams. And so if you hear any of these other teams say, oh, man, we're so, it's like, no, you're not. You're not, though. Because look how many guys these guys have on the injured list. So anyway, yeah,
thanks Cleveland.
So
we
here this week. Here this week, we have the two ends of the spectrum, Cleveland and Houston. And Vogt said before the game, he said, yeah, I know they're a little banged up right now. Like, more than that, my guy. All right. We have two more quick topics before we say goodbye. First is just like, let's just do another little acknowledgement. Munetaka Murakami homered again. Fourth home run in four straight games with a homer. And I feel like we've seen some interesting stuff written about Murakami this week. I know at FanGraphs and people are kind of noticing, like, what a treat this has been. This is, and also the aesthetics of his home runs are immediately upper crust, right? I mean, if I see or someone tells me, hey, Murakami homered, I am rushing to go watch it in a way that I haven't necessarily with a lot of players recently. And I think that in and of itself is a good way to describe what he has kind of become from a watchability standpoint. But I don't know if you've what else you've enjoyed from Murakami so far.
I mean, you just know what you're going to get. You know, he's either going to hit the snot out of it in the air, or he's not going to swing, or he's going to miss it in the zone. Like, they're the three options. It's nice. A little dependability in this world goes a long way.
I'm trying to think. So I remember you were looking into, we talked a lot about like the zone contact rate. What is a zone contact rate you can have and like be a competent major league hitter? And Murakami right now is at 68.5%, which is really low. But boy, when he is making contact, going a long way. And he's not chasing. So he's drawing walks.
Yeah. For contact.
At some point.
Like I'm looking at zone contact, right? So like zone contact rate, straightforward, ball goes in the zone. Are you hitting it? Best in baseball, Stephen Kwan, Liam Hicks. Both of these guys have literally missed one ball in the zone.
So what's that percent?
Once in the zone. That is 1%. On the flip side, for qualified hitters, Murakami has the second worst zone contact at 68.4%. This is via True Media. With Garrett Mitchell of the Brewers, the only hitter below him, the concerning thing here is that the third worst zone contact rate in all of baseball is Rafael Devers.
Oh, which has been a trend for him in recent seasons as he has kind of looked to access more power. And Devers was like also an interesting comparison for Murakami potentially.
This stat is not like a damning number necessarily. Like Judge is in the bottom 10, Schwarber's down there, Jordan Walker's down there. Not hitting the baseball early in counts can be a good thing. On an 0-0 count, on a 2-0 count, it is way better to swing and miss than to fly out, right? And that's why you see some of these good players at the bottom of this list. Still, there is a point where you just can't survive. And Murakami so far has been above that line.
Yeah. And, but right, Kwan, Hicks, and Horner, they were talking, right, where they're at like 97, 99%. Usually over the course of a full season, that number for the league leaders will be around 92, 93. But that is definitely a contrast. All right, one more quick thing before we say goodbye. That is those Kansas City Royals. I mentioned it earlier. They are announcing, I believe they just announced this morning, that ballpark is going downtown, folks. That is
they're
a
just
going to
pick it up and move it.
They're just not quite. I don't know what is going to happen to Kauffman Stadium. I don't know if that's part of today's announcement, but they're going to build a new ballpark downtown. And I am very curious to just like talk to, as someone who has never been to Kauffman Stadium, it's one of the few ballparks I haven't been to. I'm looking forward to talking to people around the Royals and people in Kansas City and Kansas City Royals fans. I would love to hear from you. Honestly, I'm just going to use this as a call to action here. If you're a Royals fan, if this is a ballpark that means a lot to you, if you have strong feelings about the ballpark going downtown, getting a new one, what this is good. I'm sure there's a lot of taxpayer related topics that are relevant in this conversation for people that live there and how they feel about that. But I'd love to hear from Royals fans about how they feel about this, because this is a big decision. And when we think about the future of baseball and how teams, big decisions that teams make and ownership groups make involving their stadium, some for the better, some for the worse. I'm curious where this one kind of falls in the spectrum. Certainly several years away.
Yeah, I mean,
but
the headline,
how this is going to go.
Mm-hmm. The headline of it feels positive. I just need to learn more. Like, moving the park downtown and not in a giant parking lot is probably going to create a more interesting experience.
Sure.
For people.
Sure.
But it is also,
I would assume.
But the Royals are not doing it because it's interesting. They're doing it because they can probably make a lot of money by having the Battery style village around the area. I just tell us what you think. If you're a Kansas Cityan.
Yeah. Let us know. But for now, we're going to say goodbye. Thank you to Matt Gelb for joining us on Baseball Barbacast. Definitely go check out his work at The Athletic. Some of the best that you're going to find among the beat writers doing this all the time. Thank you to Andrew Hartz and Ingrid Rosas for producing. We'll be back on Friday. Will the Mets have won by then? Will the Phillies have won by then? Ooh, we're going to find out. Thanks for listening.
Yes, bye-bye, and bye-bye. Yes.
Oh, yes and yes. Jake's calling it.